I said to you we're going to debrief and I'm going to ask you questions about how that presentation applies to you and to your ministry. Just hold that. I hope you've got notes, because that's in that next bit when Toby leads question and answer and things like that. My brief now is to talk a little bit about leadership. Becky was actually quite persistent on this. She said, when you talk about leadership, I want you to talk about leadership in a way that people can do it in their ministry and can do it in their church. And so I want to talk about a few principles of leadership that I think are essential to get. The first one about leadership that we want to understand is that culture is driven by leaders. It's actually not true. Culture is driven by the way we do things. So if we're all slobs in the workplace or we're slobs in the church, that becomes the culture. I go to a Baptist church and they turn up late for church, just like I heard you guys chuckle at today, and they say, oh, you've got to forgive us, we're Baptists. In fact, every denomination says you've got to forgive us, we're whatever we are. The truth is, the culture is, we allow people to start late, we keep a culture. Now, I've chosen a trite thing like that because it is there. I promise you, you can create a culture in a community group of wearing orange shirts. Indeed, wearing khaki shirts. What you honour, what you measure, what you notice are the things that people will pick up. And that is leadership, that is followership. So when you start to notice that people are getting a good haircut or a good beard or a good moustache or a nice pair of jeans, I like the way you wear the jeans, people start to incorporate that as what is good. And slowly the culture is reinforced by certain things. If the culture of your group is one where we want to reinforce that we enjoy ourselves without the cost of making hard decisions or hard challenges, you reinforce that sort of country club mentality we talked about before. It's the job of the leader to always keep the eye focused on what are we actually trying to do? What are the outcomes we're looking at which are driving towards the end game? If you want the word to be honoured in a growth group, then your job as a growth group leader, a community group leader, is to always say, well, what does God's word say about that? If you want people to be smart and intelligent and offer an opinion, you'll say, what do you think? And you won't follow it up with the word. These are the conscious decisions that become the unconscious culture of a group. Culture is the hardest thing to change. So you want to know what you're trying to do and what you're not trying to do. And so leadership is essential. But I wanted to just put in front of you a couple of principles that I think are really important when it comes to leadership within a church, but in any organisation. In any organisation, we have levels of people, right? We can't do it all from the top, so we either employ or we ask for volunteers in a sort of structure like that. If you're in any secular organisation, the truth is, though, there are two most important levels that build a culture within an organisation. Does anybody know which roles they are, which levels of the organisation they are? One of them is the leader. Sometimes in church that's a number of people, sometimes that's one person. So that person, we will look to see what their authentic behaviour looks like, what they say, how they match up, and we will work out how that influences the culture. In fact, as we move more and more to millennials, millennials will make their choice on whether it's a good company on whether or not the authenticity of the leader's words and their actions match up. When there is incongruence, we will disrespect greatly and find it hard to be motivated. So the leader is really important. As I said, in church, that could be more than Toby. It could be a few people. Who is the other role in an organisation? Think about a sales organisation or a marketing organisation or a project management organisation where you have teams of people. Who is the most influential person in those organisations?
Team leader.
A team leader. So if you think about the customer facing, which is the salespeople, they're the most influential on how people will perceive the company. But actually how they behave, the most influential level is the sales manager, the customer team manager, the project team manager, the marketing manager. The reason why is because sort of 80 or 90% of the people in the organisation are at that customer facing or whatever it is role in the organisation. In the church, who is that person? If this is Toby and maybe a couple of others? Who is that person in the church?
Us.
It's you. So I can tell you, well, those of you who are managing teams, who are leading teams, I can tell you that the way you live your life, the way you behave, the way you speak, what you choose to reinforce or edify, will have an enormous impact on the majority of your church, an enormous impact on what they do. That's just leadership 101. As we read our Bibles, 1 Corinthians 11, imitate me as I imitate Christ. That was what Paul said to Timothy, or he said to the Corinthian church. Say that to Timothy? Whoever he said it to. 1 Peter 3, Peter says, talked about the example of the leaders to others. It's biblical that we are the people who will be imitated. We are the people who will be copied. And so if anyone doesn't believe me, find the parents in the room and have a look at how the children live out their life. It's all imitation. It's all copying those people we respect. And so what we do here is important. What we say, what we do, and what we reinforce. I love your orange shirt. I love your orange shirt. Oh, I love your orange shirt. Oh, I love your orange shirt. Next week, if I keep doing that and you respect me, you watch people start to wear orange shirts. It's a stupid example, but it is the way it will happen. When I started as a sales representative, I didn't know how to make sales calls. And by the way, I didn't drink wine. I was a 21-year-old. I didn't drink wine, but my boss knew that the first thing I needed to learn was how to make sales calls. So the whole team, there was an incentive. When we come to a sales team meeting, anyone who makes 40 sales calls in a week will get a bottle of wine. $15 bottle of wine back then in 91 was a really nice bottle of wine. If you make 50 calls, you'll get 2 bottles of wine. As I said, I didn't drink wine at this stage, 21-year-old. I went to every sales meeting and I was darn well going to get 4 bottles of wine. They were fortnightly meetings. I built a cellar and I didn't drink wine. It was about the fact that I was getting commended in front of my peers. I didn't drink wine, but I got commended in front of my peers. You see, what was being noted, what was being measured, what was being held up by the leader was what I respected. It was also the praise in front of my peers. And that's how culture is built. We were the highest performing sales team in the company because we were being modeled certain things. We had to develop quality. Why do I say that? Because leadership is important. Everything we do from that leadership through to this leadership is reinforcing that culture. So we really believe that a Christian spends time talking to non-Christians about the gospel. Toby says, I'm too busy, I just can't do it, I don't need any non-Christians. The person here who Toby's meeting with says, how are you going on that, Toby? And Toby says, I just haven't got any time. No, me neither. Listen, Meg, I expect you to be meeting with Christians. And she says, Peter, are you meeting with Christians? Well, I haven't got time. You see, what I've created is I've created the excuse, which is not okay for the system, but it's okay between you and me. And so you say the same thing. So that's the excuse that travels down. That's how culture shifts. How are you going in reading God's word? Oh, I found it really hard this week. That's a normal response. But that normal response deserves a rebuke. Oh, what are you going to do about that? Because when Toby says, I'm finding it hard to do, as I'm sure he does sometimes, if that becomes his norm, I'm still saying you should be reading God's word, you should be reading God's word, but someone finds out, David finds out that I'm not reading God's word, well, there's the excuse that breaks the system. Folks, this is how culture forms and breaks, is the way we make excuses. So the one thing we need to do as leaders, which is what you're going to finish on this afternoon, is what are the things in the system that we need to be doing to reinforce this idea of making and growing disciples of Jesus? I've only got a few minutes, so I just want to finish with one thing that I think is essential, therefore, for the way we work with leaders. And this is to think about what it is to disciple someone. If you want to build a discipleship culture, there's two things in this. One of them is second line leadership and one is first line leadership. If you want to build a culture of intentional discipling You need to know what you're trying to build. If I was to ask you to run a workshop and tell me, David, what is it to work with someone and help them grow as a disciple? You're probably going to describe something for me, and if I say intentional and intensive, you're going to describe something that would take quite a bit of time, I think. That time might be just me and you. That might be me and you and a couple of others, so it could be a triplet or a quadruplet or something like that. But ultimately, you're probably going to describe something that allows us to share life a bit, allows us to ask questions, allows us to pray, allows us to sit around God's Word and have community. It takes time, right? So I then have to ask the question, how many people can I do that for? I mean, how many people can you do that for? I can probably do that with about three people. I can't do that with a lot of people. So why in the average church do we ask someone like Toby to be doing that for 200 people or 100 people or even 50 people? He ain't got the bandwidth. And that's not what he's able to do in a real way. By the way, if you ask him to do that, he's such a faithful guy, he'll probably try. And guess what? What's he going to model? He's going to model something that's slightly less than David just described for me. He's going to model that life-on-life discipleship, if I could use that term, is actually just catching up once every 6 months or something like that. Which is not bad, but it's not what he's trying to say. This is the mature life of a disciple. So there's two things that Toby has to know. If he wants to build a culture of discipleship, he needs to be able to do it with one or two people, maybe one person. Must to be able to think about what it is and model it, but he needs to engage other people in it. So I've sort of learned over the years, if you want to make a discipling culture, this is what leaders need to be able to do. They need to be disciples themselves. They need to be disciplers themselves, which is me with David, not breaking the example. What I say publicly, this is me, I'm not an artist, Jonathan, at all, as you can tell. That's meant to be a lectern. When I speak, now I might speak in a small group, I might speak to a bunch of guys over here, I might speak to a bunch of women, I might speak in the pulpit. Wherever I speak, my words and my deeds need to match up, because you know that if they don't, straight away I'm undermining discipleship. This is the norm that most people get, but here's the thing that most people don't get. And because I'm not able to draw, Jonathan, that's a smiley face. The fourth thing I need to be able to draw is I need to be able to have is a smiley face. I need to start to learn what it is to be happy when somebody else is discipling others. So, Susan, I need to be happy that you are discipling others. And so I need to start to think about what it is to be a second line leader rather than just always doing it myself. If I'm going to build a culture that's pervasive, I need to be one, I need to own the practice of discipling, I need to speak with consistency, but I also need to be happy that others would own that practice of discipling. Now replace the word disciple with anything in any business or any organisation, and that's what you're going to need to start to do if you want to build that culture. If you don't, it's only about Toby, or it's only about Becky, and that's as far as it's going to go, and as soon as they've gone, it's going to change. Which takes me to just the last point then, which is second line leadership. We've already said that one person can't look after too many people. So what we do in the system is we start to raise people up to do what we call second line leadership. I like to call first-line leadership, think about it as a community group leaders, or leading a team, leading a serving team. I like to call it a little bit heroic leadership. Heroic, however you spell it. Heroic leadership. Why do we call it heroic leadership? Because that's where all the glamour goes. It's the sales manager who gets all the credit for the sales team doing well. It's the growth group leader, the community leader, who sees all of the growth in the people. It's the mission leader who's hands-on that gets to see the conversion, the person running Christianity Explored. But who's looking after the person who does the Christianity Explored? That person is just as important but they don't get the credit for the people who went through Christianity Explored and were converted. But without them being there, this person may be struggling immensely. And so if you're going to be a growing church that is able to grow into the future, there are some of you that are going to need to move into what is second line leadership. And second line leadership is the hardest step in any organization, because I no longer get praise for doing what the system does. I no longer get praise for seeing people grow in their love for Jesus. I no longer get praise for seeing conversion. In fact, I might get the blame for what goes on. But what I start to have to love is the fact that David is getting the praise for that, or Susan is getting the praise for that. And that is an enormous step within the church. What I start to shift towards, and this is kind of leadership pipeline thinking, if the person here, let's think about growth groups, community groups, the person, the community group leader needs to most value their own discipleship and the disciples in the group that they're being trusted with, because they're a discipler. The person who's helping community group leaders needs to most value their own discipleship, self, discipleship of the community group leader, and the capability of the community group leader as a discipler. You see, that's one step removed from the process. But what that person gets to do is make sure that the discipler, the community group leader, is staying focused on the outcomes and on the intent, which is extremely important. Because left to my own devices, I'll start to get focused just on the outcomes and forget that it's about what we're after at the big end of town, which is to make disciples and mature disciples. Now, I've skated through that very quickly. I just wanted to put that on the table, because that's the phase that you're at as a church. Your ministries are growing, your teams are growing. Some of you here are not leaders at the moment, but you're going to have to become leaders, and some of you who are leaders at the moment will need to become leaders of leaders, which is this second line leadership. Those who step into second line leadership, you need to know that's the hardest step there is, but it's a really important step, because you're the person who helps to reinforce a culture across a number of people and get to equip people who are disciples of others. And then finally, I said that already, didn't I? But I'll say it again. The strategic growth of any church over 2,000 years, we say that it's about making disciples, but the real strategic step is our ability to make disciplers, who will make more disciples, who will make more disciplers. And then the gospel is here for another 1,000 years, unless Jesus returns first. That's all I'll say about leadership.